It's real fun to, hang out, let's say, with a couple or several other primates and appreciate the texture of virtuality, of resting in it. No, see what shows up as a conversation piece. As this is felt, as this appears, if I'm not placing any demand upon it or myself, as in trying to win an explanation or win a spiritual perspective. Extract something, plot a strategy for, future enjoyment. We become the fool. And that has to be a revolution in consciousness. The typical modes of communication or getting through the day are, so aggressive. If we raise our children by watching TV, then they model the behavior of banal animated characters or insane adults, pushing and pushing and processing and condemning and seeking influence. And that's how that particular, medium thrives. But Waldorf kids don't necessarily turn out much better. They're fucking looped too. Even though they learn at their own pace and they sing songs and they make oatmeal and they, draw with pastels. They still end up being crazy. Sex fiends, most of them.
Suppression worked.
Now, I always used to like to go to the bars where the Waldorf chicks hung out. Hey, I'm a Pisces and I've got some pastels at home. They were like, let's do this. This is it. This is what the enlightened zombie apocalypse looks like.
Not bad.
That's okay.
Nobody's threatened. So far as I can tell.
Cup of tea, slice of pie. Mm-hmm. Just chilling. It's like one's inner heresy. Just goes out of business. How was that Joey Lott interview, Suzanne? Did you get through much of it?
No, I turned it off. But then I was listening to some Japanese guy after that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or Japanese American, I guess.
Uh-huh.
He was interesting.
Was that a Bat Gap thing?
Yeah, that was a Bat Gap thing, yeah.
What was his story?
Well, I mean, he seemed like a relatively kind of happy kind of guy who was a truck driver and just, you know, being in silence a lot, he just sort of fell into some of his own inquiry and just realized, you know, he wasn't a person, you know.
Now everyone's going to go out and buy a truck.
Yeah.
That's nice. So was his demeanor and his banter engaging?
Like a almost like a childlike quality, so he was okay. I mean,
mm-hmm.
He was easier to listen to than Joey Lott.
yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. Joey Lott seems to have some kind of weird chip on his shoulder or something.
Seems really serious and kind of more like what the Stoics I was listening about last week were of, you know, like, and not particularly a joyful kind of whatever or anything, you know, or
yeah.
Maybe he's different in other contexts. I don't know.
Well, if you want to, you know, separate yourself from the pack somehow, you know, where do you go? What do you do? What would your vocabulary set be? You know, your experiential or so-called biographical presentation be if you wanted to be set apart from Wayne Lickerman and Naho and, you know, stuff like that. Like Joey has found some kind of, you know, niche, I guess, which satisfies his constitution.
Is he a YouTuber?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can find him. It's almost like putting a certain kind of re-emphasis on the what would you call it, the ordinariness or rhythms of human life, human existence, as a way to get out from under the multi-decades long despair of being a frustrated spiritual seeker. Yeah, but I think Joey might have left the angst of spiritual seeking too soon.
Mm.
I think that he had a you know, kind of an early diversionary experience that may have left him in a particular mindset or a particular perspective. But it doesn't, he doesn't strike me as I don't know, what would you say, embodying some kind of fruition that you would expect from somebody of that ilk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not selling anything. I mean, not anything that seems really appealing.
Yeah, that's right. You wouldn't go out of your way to pick up what he's putting down because he's not really putting down anything that's all that interesting.
I mean, with the Japanese guy, he was nice. I mean, although that sort of evoked a more of an envy from me because he was he had found something very transcendent, for lack of a better word. You know?
Yeah, yeah. If the envy is not there, it's a waste of time.
Do you think there's really truth to that, or are you just kidding around?
Well, no, I think there is some truth to it. I mean, one, we're considering ourselves, and fortunately, we run into a kind of a wall as we consider ourselves. There's a certain, very legitimate, organic, and sincere disquietude. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, the authenticity of that disquietude lines us up so that we can try to make some, you know, discoveries or create a context for, you know, the pursuit or the acquisition of refined human or spiritual experience. So if you run into someone who's speaking in a way that doesn't speak to you somehow, whether through envy or whether, you know, depthful harmonics or frustrate you or infuriate you, then, you know, there's nothing there. There's no calories. You're not gonna get any mileage from it. Yeah. You're already, let's say, beyond whatever Joey Lott might have to offer you.
I mean, I guess if a teacher was like stuck in some sort of dark night of the soul or something, that would be.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, it's fun to look at, what is the geometry of present experience being felt as separate or fractured or insufficient? Where does the longing for some kind of, you know, spiritual fruition come from? And for so long, we're easily distracted. We think that our frustration or our insufficiency might have to do with material aspects of our life. Usually attention driven, right? Attention driven or security driven. Getting over the emotional and mental illnesses. that we've had the good fortune to adopt. And so there's so many curious layers to, you know, the unwinding of one's consciousness or one's confidence game. And it becomes subtle and nuanced as the reflex to manufacture a world in which we find ourselves as a victim of insufficiency starts to shift. That's the... what would you call it? You know, I won't call it the end of, but, you know, the slowing down of the reflex of craving. I think that's what's enviable about a guy that drives around in a truck and is quiet a lot of the time and stumbles into a kind of self-reflection that matures into right, the cessation of craving. The cessation of... individuation. As, right, I mean, as a psychological overlay. But the end of craving can't be some kind of a put down, right? Or refutation. It can't be some kind of bracing or vow. It has to be, you know, curiously present and strange and immersive. Maybe you could say, you know, beingness gets tired of assertion and accusation, psychological time, becoming, security seeking, just gets so fucking weary. That just, you know, by virtue of the catharsis of that weariness, it puts itself down. You don't do it, you know, because you or I, you know, we can't do or not do anything. But we're not talking about something that occurs within the, you know, a field of self-will. Or a field of some kind of psychological understanding. Beingness is very, very pushy and very, very outgoing. And the miraculous capacity to create a world and then solve problems in that imaginary world has just a remarkable urgency. And nothing, no spiritual intervention can do a thing about it. even if you sit a 3 month or 3 year retreat, somehow just by itself, the, I don't know, miracle of presence backs off. Which is very fluffy. There's a very, very provocative, luscious harmonic in the nature of being. You know, a radiant tickle. So somehow the what we call the mind, instead of participating in assertive dream, imagination and consequences and time and security seeking, regret and all the stuff that we do, right, as a person with a story. That same, you know, call it energy of attentivity or interest, discovers itself. So we figure out, you could say, just because we're naturally drawn to, you know, optimal joy, it turns out that the absence of oneself is optimal joy. And that's felt. So we just go to the feeling. And that habit for thinking and deciding and figuring out and choosing and closure and, you know, all the stuff we're so good at, just could care less. You know, think of a, you know, a candle, a lit candle, you know, and the, it's kind of like the simple dancing beauty of the flame at the tip of a lit candle. It's like, that flame knows it's not going anywhere. It's just not going to become anything. It's not going to amount to much. It just loves to sit right there at the top of that candle and fucking burn. And it's absolutely beyond sated, saturated with itself, bliss beyond, to just hang out at the top of that candle and burn. That's us. It's fun. It's strange not to have come from a place, not to be in a place, and not to have any place to go. Fuck you, Joey Lott. I mean, we're in big trouble when we run out of whatabouts. Fuck. God damn it, I can't go to retreats anymore because I've run out of whatabouts. God damn it. And worse than that, we can't stand hanging out, you know, with a bunch of sincere seekers that are functioning through the hysteria of what about? We thrive on panic. Which can usually be translated into something like, what about me?
So, raison d'etre. To be fancy.
We want our listeners to think that we are well read. But you don't want to make up some weird fucking bullshit like John DeReuter and start babbling inanities about resting in the heart or some kind of bullshit like that. You don't have to like sentimentalize this thing or make it about an organ. Rest in your prostate.
What if you don't have one?
Don't make me go X-rated here.
Any organ will do.
What's that?
Any organ will do.
Any organ will do.
That's right. You know, it's like we seek and we push and we pursue and we practice and repeat. Seek and push and pursue and practice, repeat. And when this fucking thing sneaks up on you, you're like, huh? You know, we've been pushy and demanding for so long, and then this thing sneaks up on you and just pulls all of your pride out from underneath you. And you're like, what? You know, and a million questions and concerns and wisecracks and clever, pithy sayings. They're just fucking gone. If you don't create a world in the first place, then you don't have to resolve a world. You know, so much energy is consumed in resolving that which we presume that we have, you know, created, resolving the irritabilities of the world that has kind of made itself known to us, that we live with or toil in representational. Oh, it's really strange to see that we don't create a world. So then there's no longer any demand for resolution of anything or remedy. You know, if you start speaking too fancifully, then it makes it appear as if there is an enviable place or an enviable condition that one would like to have or occupy. But there is no enviable place, and there is no enviable condition that one could possibly have or occupy. So it's, you know, it kind of takes the sting out of someone that drove around in the truck for a long time and then got to some place that then he could articulate in a kind and playful and undefended manner that might trigger, you know, envy or appreciation in an aspirant. If that guy found something, even if it was like a silent something, he should look again. Yeah, what's his name? Fuck him too.
Fuck them all.
Fuck them all is the really fuck them all ashram. I'll put up the gate. Consciousness masquerades as something created. But all it can really do is pretend to be creating. It never actually becomes something created. Thank you. you know, it turns out your closet is absolutely empty until you open the door. There's nothing in your refrigerator until you open the door. There's nothing in your consciousness until you open the door.
Could we call that the Schrodinger's cat of everyday life?
Absolutely. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That what you're describing is an action. If you, what's there then if you cease taking that action?
Yeah.
What do we have?
That's right. Yeah, you have this apparitional presentation of creating that never turns into that which is created. It's just a effulgent creation event.
Or myth.
An effulgent creation myth.
Yeah. It's very seductive.
It is. You see, you can't have a very serious quarrel with, let's call it an appreciation of reality as an effulgent creating. Because you don't, what are you going to be so angry with? I mean, because you're ongoingly, right? What was Ponce de Leon looking for in Florida? The Fountain of Youth. Right? Was it Florida?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was Florida, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we were taught.
Yeah, it's probably in Daytona somewhere. Hi, Gavin. We can only get into a quagmire if this has actually created something, if it has become something, and enter quagmire. But if it's just splurging as an effulgent implication, then, you know, your best bet is just dumbfounded bliss. What's cooking, Gavin? You got your microphone working? No, we can see you, but we can't hear you. Oh, I see. There, here comes the chat window. Are you too cheap to buy a microphone?
I
Oh, I see. It only stops working when you're on this call. Like when you get on Peter Brown's calls, your microphone works. But do you see the lower left-hand corner where it has an icon of a microphone and a video and a camera? The arrow next to the microphone? If you click that arrow, you'll see a handful of devices show up. Is it possible to select the device that your microphone is working from or on? Just trying to help. I don't mean to be so pushy. It's all right. If you want to ask a question or something, you can chat. We were just making fun of you anyway before you joined the call. You know, it's like to come up with some tragedy about your life. It's so painfully contrived. It's like, fuck, I think something's happened to me and I don't like it. Oh, that sucks. That has got to suck. It's like just one small sense of boundary will proliferate into a kaleidoscope of boundaries, imaginary boundary conditions. And then the imaginary world that I inhabit as an imaginary person, craving security from ascended masters. Gets created on a dime.
Hey, can you hear me?
God damn it, we can. Yeah, sure. What's on your mind?
Stop us.
This is a runaway train. Make something up about yourself so we don't have to agonize about ourselves.
Okay, well, it seems like everything is perfect, and yet I get bored. I like to sit around and do nothing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is kind of like an opium den.
Without the opium.
I know. Not really. We're too poor to purchase opium, so just sit around like this.
Nothingness talking about nothing.
Yeah, so you get bored, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. No problem there. I mean, this is a stupendous vitality, yes? Mind and feeling and weather and day turning into night and night turning into day and the coming and going of creatures and, you know, the 75 bus that runs down such and such avenue. So it's a stupendous vitality. I mean, it's, you know, mind-blowing.
And that being bored and listless, it seems like it's different from, like, I went to Peter Brown's last thing, his Wednesday night thing, mm-hmm. and at the end I was just sort of worn out and dazed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems more productive.
Right. Yeah. Being worn out and dazed is more productive than boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Because boredom, boredom and restlessness set in when we imagine ourselves to be right in a world, right? As a vital creature with an opposable thumb and a rivetingly fantastic neocortex, and where we're bored. Yeah, so we want to, you know, do something, make something happen, call an old friend, tease.
Well, it's like I'm bored with the predictability of my world, or so it's like things aligning in the way that my mind expects them to, or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
They're not pleasantly different, and it's different from like it. It seemed like at the end of Peter Brown's thing Wednesday, mm-hmm. that it was like I was worn out by my mind not being able to resolve things, right? It's like my mind not working. Yeah.
That's what we've been talking about on the call. That's what we've been talking about. Yeah, you stop the demands that you place upon yourself, not that you do it, but the vitality of consciousness expressively, right, grasps. I mean, our eyes grasp and our hands grasp and our minds grasp and our behavior and our appetites grasp and dwell in a kind of a tension field, right? Tension, attention and tension. And that in and of itself is wearisome, but we're loath to give it up. And when you get exposed to, a shining being like Peter Brown, and he, without lifting a finger, you know, erases your inner restlessness, then by contrast, you can see yourself more clearly. Right? I mean, the gift of the jnani is to show you, not just chat at you, but to show you experientially from a feeling tone of what it feels like for the world and the creation of the world to collapse. Which I think could be a metaphor for my mind's not working. Yeah. And if I would say, if that's, you know, revealed to you, the collapse of the world, then there's going to be all kinds of fallout as we invariably are compelled to tangle with the creation of the world. It's a maddening juxtaposition, and goes on for some time, and it's great. It's infuriating. It's wonderful. It's full of bumps and grinds and affection and ranting and frustration, and all kinds of cool things occur as you discover what it feels like to not create a world. And yet, you know, let's say you can't occupy that at will. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there's a vacillation that happens for quite some time. The gift of the cessation of the world, which is the Gyani's gift, and then the recoil. Yeah. You know, the reflexive recoil of going back into the rhythm of creating a world and then being bored or frustrated or malnourished or, you know, impatient and untrusting of it all.
But that rhythm eventually dies out, and one just falls back into, like, if the teacher shows it experientially enough times, then one stops creating a world there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in an ideal fairy tale, somebody's journey of waking up, we would hope it would look like that. But it's not. It's going to be weird, and it's going to suck. We can't say, you know, it's not a question of how many encounters with whomever you have the privilege of sitting with is, you know, going to result in a, what would you call it, reliable release, right? For you or for whomever, from the reflex to create the world.
Yeah. And yet we hear these stories of you only need to see it one time.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Peter Brown, he said that he claimed that that there is no awakening that is on and off. Right? If it's on and off, you haven't really seen it the first time, or I've never seen it.
Well, you're always a samsaric idiot that no one likes. And you're also, you know, a nirvanic god that everybody loves.
Yeah.
You're always that. You're never not one at the expense of the other. So these, you know, absolutes that we participate in, as it comes to trying to figure out what the rules are or what the symptoms are of the, you know, process of my so-called unfolding, they're fun, but you can see that they're kind of maddening and infuriating, and they're not true. None of them are true. No, none of these absolutes are true. Seeing it once, not seeing it once, coming and going, and da da da. What the fuck? Nobody knows what's going on. You see, if you're aiming for a kind of a condition that you think you're not in now, well, you're fucked. That's all that's happening, is you're imagining that there might be a condition that you're not in now. But there's no condition. Well, don't worry about what you see or don't see, because why give a shit about what it is that you see and don't see? Or even, you know, have a contrast or a comparison. Because by having a contrast or a comparison or some memory about what you've seen and what you haven't seen and how good it was or how shallow it was, you're just operating presently, right, under the myth of time, operating presently under the myth of a world. where there appears to be vacillation. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole force, the whole inertial force of yourself having been somewhere prior to now is what? It's made up. So if you see that you're making up the sense that you've been somewhere before now, and that shit happened to you that was either final or not final, you're just making that up, right? Yeah. So and by doing so, and we all do it and we've all done it, so we're not singling you out, right? That's how mind functions. It pretends that it's presently existent, presently dependent. And therefore, it's looking for, signs of good fortune or ill fortune as concerns its own awakening, right? But what the fuck are we talking about? What the hell? How could you turn this into something sufficiently solid so where you can find either pleasant or unpleasant evidence of yourself? Right? You can't find or rely upon the apparitional presentation of evidence of yourself having been anywhere prior to now, or even being here, or that you'll be someplace later with, you know, maybe some kind of advantageous progress towards self-realization. You could say just for fun that we're not sufficiently erased. Right, all you are, your entire life, it really is at the head of a pencil. Your entire life is a pencil eraser, and you've still got some left.
Some lead. Lead on the pencil.
Oh, no, eraser at the top.
Right.
Again, not singling you out, because we're all insane in exactly the same way. We think we've got some eraser remaining. And so we can qualify our experience as if we're a creature, as if we're on a spiritual journey. And we can come up with a million symptoms that look positive, and a million symptoms that don't look so good. Right? So one mistakes presence, for lack of a better word, as being my presence. Right? Presence being anthropomorphized by the likes of you as the fond recipient of a whole bunch of life experience, which is just not what's happening right now. It's not what this is. But if you mistake yourself as the recipient of a bunch of life experience, then it's obviously easy to come up with some kind of stratagem that you'd like to be enlightened, whatever you might think that is. And yesterday was a good progress enlightenment day, but today, bad, bad, bad. I'll tell you something, neither the good progress days or the bad ones mean anything. Because if this is not presently awake in the way that it is for you, then you'll always be, for as long as you are, right, seduced by symptoms. this is true for all of us. I mean, we're either seduced by symptoms or the reflex to create the world somehow of its own nature just shuts down.
It seems like you kind of see that those are the two options, and it becomes serious, like no, really. Either be continuously tormented or not.
Cool.
I mean, if you're relating to, because it just keeps coming. There's no...
Gray has its advantages, but black and white's even better. It's like, oh, fuck. I'm either going to be tormented or something other than that. I mean, wouldn't we like to imagine that we can go on thinking and imagining and portraying ourselves to our heart's content without torment? That's what the seeker wants. The seeker wants to portray his or her imaginary life without torment. And you're like, I'll sell you an ashram.
I'll sell bridges, you anything.
All the bridges are taken. I'll sell you an ashram. Right? Individuation, the myth of individuation in time, which amounts to the creation of a world in which you dwell as a creature, is spelled T-O-R-M-E-N-T. How much time and money we waste on trying to like fool everyone that we can get through this without torment. I'm good. No, I meditate. I take vitamin B. I've been to see Jeannie Zandy. I'm going to get through this without torment. Send us a postcard. Hey, I've got high self-esteem. So Gavin, it's like we want to own this somehow. We want to be the captains of our own enlightenment. Time for a news break.
Donald Trump.
You see, so you bring the power of your attention, which is prodigious, to yourself from the vantage point of a creature curious about self-realization and keenly on the lookout for the symptoms of progress. This magical power that you have, this prodigious attention, is counterfeit. And as we get accustomed to that, to seeing how our miraculous capacity for prodigious attention is counterfeit, then, yeah, we stop creating a world. And then who gives a fuck about what progress you're making or not making, or whether you've seen it once or not, or deeply enough for it to be some kind of finality? Even the myth of that there is something to be seen will drive you crazy. There's nothing to be seen. By whom? Your prodigious attention? The only thing your prodigious attention can do is lie to you. So no matter what it sees, it's not going to be any use. We hold ourselves out, you know, in search of an ideal observation, an ideal spiritual experience that will be the end of ourselves, right? The permanent seal of our so-called realization. But that's a myth. Are the police coming or they're not coming? All right, we're safe again. See, the curious sense of having a prodigious attention is a myth, right? It's the movement of association and metaphor, world creation in which you place yourself as a creature in the center of it somehow. So you're an oceanic profusion of ideas. But if you back off from that, again, not willfully, it's just a little weird, you know, it's a kind of an Aikido. You don't back off from it by placing a demand on anything. You can't. So you back off from this prodigious magical power to tell yourself something about yourself. And then you got ungots. You got nothing. Let all the other seeker fuckers that hang out with Peter Brown worry about how soon they're going to get realized.
But you have a presence that could be talked about in terms of a richness of present sensation.
Sure, you can. You remember, you can call it anything you want, whenever you want. Because the feeling tone of what this might actually be is just, it's self-fulfilling. Call it whatever you like. But no matter what you call it, that's not true. No matter how you feel it, that's not true. Yeah. There's no enduring centrism to your experience. You're not the recipient of experience. So you can call it anything you want. You can convince anybody about anything and then, you know, sell them a bridge or an ashram or, you know, a piece of your hair. Sell them a lock of your hair. You see, it's just too weird. It's too weird. It's too strange. It's too ambivalent. It's too crazy to attempt to hold ourselves in some condition, measure that condition by what we like or dislike, and then imagine that our condition should somehow be better or different or change or permanent somehow. You know. You're kind of like Pinocchio hoping that you'll be a real life boy someday. Just go with the nose. Mm. God, isn't it weird if, like, nobody had an opinion about anything? See, once all you need is one idea, and then you have a million problems. One idea, just one, even a little idea, million problems instantaneously. This is strangely counterintuitive. You know, you just don't apply yourself. Were you getting a degree? Going out on a first date? You have to apply yourself. In this realm of useless discovery. Just don't apply yourself at all to anything. If someone wonders why you're not applying yourself, you just tell them to fuck off. In a nice way. Hey, I love you. Fuck off. Can you feel the tension, right? As soon as you apply yourself to yourself or to anything, this incredible conjuring shows up about what you're not, about what you are, about what you once were, about what you hope to be again, right? The symptoms and the quarrel and the comparison and the mitigation and the craving just come pouring in, right? Yeah. I mean, one tiny little opinion. Bam, you're just overwhelmed instantly by messages. Usually of one form or another of self-condemnation.
You can apply if it's a game and you know the game to do so, right? If it's just a fun thing that you happen to come up with doing.
Yes, yes, if you're not, yes, if you are not disturbed by your own banal stupidity, go for it. Oh my God. I mean, you know, what's worse than like a couple of human beings trading opinions? Nothing.
Possibly.
That was like a trick joke. I didn't know the answer until I got there. I couldn't think of anything worse. It's like, fuck, that must be the worst thing. Oh, no. What's worse than two human beings having opinions? Having an insight.
That's the same thing.
Ew.
Still really just an opinion.
Yeah.
Ew, I'm
nice. nobody really likes to see that the best they've got is just, you know, evaporative mayhem. We want enlightenment to be something. Something I can, you know, sink my teeth into. I can write home about. I can set up a website. I can let people know something happened to me. Maybe they'll talk to me and give me money. Something happened to me. Give me some of your money. Why don't you shovel my fucking walk and then I'll give you some money. I'd like to see Wayne Lickerman pick up a snow shovel. Then I'll give him some money. Instead of sitting around talking to people and saying, give me your money.
I know, and they're like celebrated, like, because they're celebrities in our culture. It's funny. You're like, dude, these people are like the worst.
Yeah. If you think that you really, really will benefit from becoming something, try again. It has to turn out to be a hell realm to actually manifest stuff. Everyone's like, oh, manifest this and manifest that, law of attraction and, you know, this and that and get what I want and blah, blah, blah. What a hell realm. When do you think you're going to come to the end of the road of desire if you've been somehow empowered to manifest shit? It's like, dudes, go back to Buddhism 101. Life really blows. You don't say. How come? Attraction and aversion. Oh. Maybe I'll give away all of my manifesting books.
What time is it? Please.
Commercial interruption.
6:19. 6:19.
I like when this is like a Woody Allen movie. I'm sorry, did that answer your question?
Thank you.
Pleasure is all mine.
I have to go, but thank you very much.
Don't go.
No, I have to.
That's all right, I understand. It's nice to see you. Let's do this again sometime.
Yes, for sure. Thank you very much.
Rock on.
I have a-